It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
To the socially distant sports bar, Mike Bubbins, Ellis James and Steph Guerrero trying our best to focus on sport when all we really want to do is watch Bobby Davro and his friends flaunt every health and safety rule in the book. We are on episode number 8 and we're making an impact, gentlemen. We are currently the 77th biggest arts and entertainment podcast in Malta.
Well, come on,
yes.
Malta.
That is what we were aiming for when we started this off.
Valletta Massive are into it.
We are the 34th best sports podcast in Belgium. The big markets are being sewn up by us, guys.
Is the Malta, does that include Gozo figures as well?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know. I'm going to have to have a look at that.
Probably caught more in Gozo.
Do you reckon it's the Maltese cross neath RFC connection?
I don't know. Maybe it's my mate John Dimond, who played international rugby for Malta.
If he's from Bari, how is he eligible?
Maltese connection. I think his parents are Maltese. A lot of Maltese and South in the Bari and Cardiff area. Around.
Well, my kids are eligible to play for Wales, Scotland, and England, so they're hedging their bets a little bit.
I'm eligible to play for Wales and England, and so much, which makes my kids also because my dad was born. Keep this between us, and the listeners. My dad was born in Worthing in Sussex. True story, Al, that my sister's into all this sort of bullshit about genealogy and stuff.
Yeah.
In the 1851 census, one Bubbins in the UK, a solitary Bubbins.
I did one of those ethically
cleansing,
questionable DNA tests to tell me where I'm from.
Yeah, how'd you go on?
Welsh.
Carmarthen pocket,
100%.
Yeah.
Carmarthen.
8 miles from my front door on both sides forever.
Basically said your relatives should have got out.
Have you seen those DNA tests? Well, they do that mapping.
Yeah.
North Wales is like a different planet. Have you seen it? There's no, they don't link to anybody. They don't even link to Anglesey or Mid Wales. It's just North Wales.
They've found genetic differences between people in North and South Pembrokeshire.
Well,
they've got the Lansker line.
Let's get a bang it. They love this, the Belgians. Go on.
So South
Pembrokeshire. Tell them about the Lansker line, mate. Go on.
It was colonised by the Flemish the 11th century.
I think around there,
So what the South Pembrokeshire, the Little England beyond Wales, and all of the towns or villages have got quite English sounding names, whereas you go 20 miles up north and then it's Eglwysuru and Crummych and
we're always fairly postcode, right?
Yeah.
But this is like within the postcode. This is when you put your postcode into like Amazon and then you gotta choose your house number. It's less than a postcode.
I read a review on Apple that said that despite them being three Welshmen, they were relatable.
fact that we were.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Not
that,
anymore.
That ship has now sailed.
Thank God.
If you're one of our Belgian listeners, maybe you've got Walloon as a first language. The Lanska Line has a Wikipedia page.
I wonder what sort of formation the Rebecca Rioters would have liked if they were playing football today.
Yeah.
Right.
Big woman up front.
Oh, God.
With that in mind, Mike, you go first. Try and okay. relate this one to Wales.
Well, this features a people that I got a lot of time for, because they are people who have quite a law unto themselves, which I like. People who are quite happy to cock a snook at authority. And this is, I mean, if Tyson Fury is the king of the gypsies, this is the gypsy king's father. So what does that make him? This is absolute class. We mentioned about people calling each other out on the internet a pod or two ago. So this is the one and only John Fury.
There's no waiting around. I want you to go today. Shut to mullet, pig. Are you listening to me, pig? I want you to go today. There's no money for you. There might be a little bit of fame for you. 2 minutes plus to you. But let me tell you something, mate. There's no money in this for you. And I know you haven't got £10. So I'm going to box you for free. Not box you, fight you for free. I've got fame. I've got money. I've got enough. But what I want to do is do you some serious damage. Are you hearing me, you pig?
How good is that?
Plenty of steroids.
I mean, two things spring to mind, right? One is that Tyson Fury and his old man, I've never heard two people sound so identical, right? I mean,
good point, actually.
They sound absolutely identical to each other, right? Secondly...
With an accent that is unique to them.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I mean. It doesn't come from anywhere in particular other than, you know, you couldn't pay me enough money to fight him. And I like a fight. You couldn't pay me enough money to fight that man. What a nutcase. I love him. I absolutely love him. The best bit... Well... I've never seen a Shepton Mallet pig.
Shepton Mallet pig?
No.
You're Shepton Mallet pig!
You're Shepton Mallet pig?
You're Shepton Mallet pig! I won't even mention your name, you Shepton Mallet, ugly Shepton Mallet pig! I just thought... So I don't know what a Shepton Mallet pig looks like. I need to look into it. Favourite bit of that video is where he contradicts himself with absolute gay abandon about halfway through.
Yeah.
And goes, break your fucking jaw! I don't even fucking swear!
Yeah. I would say that some of his messaging is inconsistent.
How intimidating does he look?
Oh. Yeah, terrifying.
And it's the way we've talked about people with hair triggers, right? He'll be livid, and I mean, like, and not like, you know, you see on mixed martial arts or you see on a lot of boxing promos,
yeah.
You're trying to put bums on seats, right? There appears to be none of that going on. Seems to be fairly genuine. But he's just, the one bit when he puts his hands up to the camera...
They are absolutely huge, those fists as well.
I'm not sure how tall he is. I mean, what's Tyson, 6'9"?
Yeah.
6'9", yeah.
So his old man's got to be a big lad as well.
Even when he said his address, it's threatening. 51 Moss Lane style!
Yeah, none of that mobile phone bollocks for John Fury. None of that, here's my mobile phone number. Here's my actual address.
Yeah, here's where I live.
What I found funny, though, is I then found Mickey Theo's video.
Yeah.
Watch that
and
as
what
well.
I find quite funny about all of these videos where angry, violent people call each other out online is it's angry, 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 threat, 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 and then eventually it has to come down to admin. Have you noticed this? And Keith Theo's like, I'm going to break your jaw. I'm going to destroy you. I'm going to smash you. I'm going to fuck you up. And for some reason, you haven't replied to my email. Like, I would love to see the email. What's the subject line?
Hi, John.
I fucking you up.
Ari, ragged in scrapyard.
Yeah. I wonder if you're free. 51 Moss Lane.
Yeah.
Well, is another video I saw linked to it, because I went down a bit of one of our famous rabbit holes, is his manager then explaining why he hadn't emailed the bloke back. You know, he's got a lot on at the moment. And then he starts...
Maybe it ended up in your spam folder. Check your spam folder. Yeah. Hey? Because I'm going to fuck you up. Check your junk.
Fucking flag this in your priority mail. I'm going to fucking smash your teeth in.
Check your junk.
I've had problems with MailChimp in the past. And I apologise. But this threat is real. It's genuine. I've got to be honest. Read my call-out video dated the 9th of April... It was in my outbox. It was in my sent items, and I apologise, but I'm still going to fuck you up the first opportunity. Listen, I get.
I'll put £250,000 up, and that is PayPal. That's legit.
Going to back you it.
I need your salt code.
You can pay it backs, PayPal, credit card. Behave yourself. Will you? None of that Bitcoin bollocks.
I've changed from Outlook because I think Gmail's actually got a more consistent server. It's a better server. I'm going to fuck you up.
Get the Firefox on there, you fucking slag. What? Easy. Easy, boys. The best bit about that, right? So there's these two middle-aged blokes that I wouldn't fuck with either of them, right? To be fair, right?
Yeah.
Both hard as nails, both fairly unhinged, both with a penchant for tech, right? They've been threatening each other in no uncertain terms the amount of physical damage they can do to each other in various scrapyards and back gardens, right? And his manager says something like, you know, I've been on to the NHS, they're not interested, they don't want our money. Well, of course they don't, you lunatic. I've been on to the NHS. Hi there. Yeah, it's Dave, John Fury's de facto manager. John's interested in kicking the fuck out of Mickey Theo in a scrapyard in London. We could be talking upwards of £500,000. Would you mind if...
He'll wear a rainbow T-shirt.
Could we attach an NHS banner to some scrap cars?
We all have individual relationships with our fathers. I am delighted that my dad in the 90s, when I was growing up, wasn't doing these call-out videos to people he knew. Right then, it is up to... Right then, the message to Dennis Spindler, financial advisor, who lives in Llandeilo, I will fight you in John Street car park, Marvin. or I don't know, St Peter's car park doesn't bother me. It's £4 for an hour. I'll put in £8. I'll fight you for 8 hours, and then I've got to pick my daughter up from athletics. Come on, the Narrias are up at 7. So as long as it's done by then, I'll fight you.
I might have a problem with a bloke called Arthur Champ at the golf club.
Right.
But he didn't call him out. He just got... I think he called him a naughty name in the bar, and then he got banned from the golf club for a month, so he had a drink in the Cock and Arms pub over the road. But at no point did my dad, and this is pre-internet days, he didn't write Arthur a threatening letter. You know, offering him to meet him in Leo's at any point in that interim month.
He could have borrowed a primitive video camera.
Yeah, that'd have been good.
And sort of set it up.
I'm not sure Arthur had a video recorder. He'd have had to drop the VCR off as well, as a thing. And by that time, probably, you know, that probably would have been...
The impact's
he's
gone.
Cooled down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, fair play to Bob Bubbins. Love, he's only dropped a video recorder on for us. What's on it, Arthur? Oh, Bob Bubbins is actually losing his shit with me. About the golf club. He wants...
Oh, he's annoyed I haven't replied to his fax.
But he gets to a point of anger where then he just goes, and Mike Tyson? He's like, whoa, 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 whoa.
What's Tyson
going to start on Mike Tyson?
What I love about Mike Tyson is he's actually obsessed by the history of boxing.
Yeah.
And as the three of us know, Merthyr, well, South Wales, but Merthyr in particular, has produced an awful lot of fantastic boxers. Ooh. So a few years ago, he came to Merthyr to pay homage to all of these great fighters. So, you know, people like Johnny Owen and Howard Winston, and he was in the middle of town, and apparently a lot of people came out of the Wetherspoons in Merthyr, and they were all shouting at him, "Mike, you think you're fucking hard?"
Yeah.
How could you cope with a street fight down the Gurness Estate? I imagine brilliantly.
Absolutely no problem at all.
I imagine he'd be superb. You, Meg Tyson thinks he's fucking...
You're hard in a ring, but anyway, you're hard in a ring, like, but ain't talking about no gloves. You know what I mean?
And then, I'm talking about, like, street fighting now, like, proper nose-barred fucking messing about, like me and Digger, like, Digger's from Aberdare, he loves a fucking scuffle. Then you got Thumper there from Troyderoo. He loves a fight as well. So Digger, Thumper, me will take you on, Mike. Oh. See you if you're proper, genuine art, and not like ring art.
No place to hide, mate, down there. dancing around, didn't they, with your jabbing and your hooking and your uppercuts, yeah, no, talking about proper scrapping, mate.
Isn't it all pressed? You know, it's easy to look hard, but you try fighting outside Papa John's one in the morning. That's proper fighting, that is.
How was it, Mike, paying homage to all of these great boxers?
Oh, well, the thing was, I was in a thing called the Mastic Men. I was in a pub called the Mastic Men in Merthyr and like that. I came out of these guys who were getting fresh with me outside of a burger bar, and it's some guy from the Gurnas. I thought I'd get a lot of respect as a fighter, but if you're listening, Mike Tyson, I'm so sorry. For that.
You know, he'd had a horrific upbringing in Brownsville, which is a part
it's
of...
It's not them, mate, is it?
it's
not Triaris. You think that's bad, mate? I worked in a glove factory in Pontypridd. You're the only one with gangs, Mike. You tell you for nothing, mate. Not the only gang, mind. We had a gang called a Duffed in Dolly's Head, right? My mate Christian Barker ran it. Why was it called that? We just found a doll with a Duffed in Head, like. What you used to do? Smoke blow, innit?
Yeah.
Smoke blow. It's a slightly different gang culture if you grew up in.
Yeah.
A lot less. I mean, the gangs that I was in as a kid.
God.
Involved things like making grass dens. When the council cut the field, we'd make a grass den. And if we had one nutter on the street, I'm not going to name his name. But his sort of gang warfare was he'd go and piss on other people's dens at night.
In my gang, we used to dare each other to jump off my mum and dad's garage roof.
Who's in the gang? Just you and your mum and dad?
We'd all jump together holding hands.
Like the Lost Boys, but much shitter.
Yeah. But mum and dad could always tell because if you jumped off the garage roof, you'd end up in the rhubarb. So, slightly different gangs.
It's the same. Really. But, you know, different gangs,
it's
different needs.
Same. Bloods and the Crips. Bit of rhubarb regrowing, all the same.
There was a Nick's Cafe gang in Barry. Nick's Cafe with the gang when I was about 17, 18. And there's a few of them. I mean, Paul Ockerbrawley was in there, Ocko. I think Stephen Batt was in there at one point. You didn't mess with the Nick's Cafe lads. You didn't mess with the Nick's Cafe lads. They just wanted to get thrown down the bank in school.
Imagine throwing Mike Tyson down the bank.
Imagine him, yeah. Bank him!
Banksies used to call
it. What happened to Mike Tyson? While he tried to bank him, she knocked out all of year three. Bank him! New kid in school. Where's he from? America!
He's got very broad shoulders for a 14-year-old. Oh,
I don't want any trouble, guys. Thank him.
Let's go for your first choice this week. Al, what have you gone for?
I think rather than my dental records, a more accurate way of aging me, or like carbon dating me, is my attitude as a football fan to the FA Cup. I love the FA Cup, and I love the FA Cup because my earliest memories of football involve watching the FA Cup final. I started watching the 88 FA Cup final, got a bit bored and went outside to play. But 89 I watched the whole way through.
Right.
And then absolutely smitten, 1990, Crystal Palace, Man United.
Yeah.
Spurs, Forest in 91. And I love the competition. And one of the best aspects of what I still think is a great competition is Giant Killing in the third round. Now, when it comes to Giant Killing, it's always really the same games that get mentioned. It's Coventry losing to Sutton in 89. Obviously, Coventry had won it 18 months before. Hereford versus Newcastle at Edgar Street is probably the most famous one. I think in the modern era, the only one that comes close is Wigan beating Man City a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Because it's still really the big ones in the 60s, 70s, and 80s and 90s. That's the golden era of the Giant Killing. And it really frustrates me when people say that Hereford and Newcastle, Ronnie Radford is the best one, because it is clearly Wrexham 2, Arsenal 1 from January 1992.
I wonder if Nicky Thomas feels he's got a score to settle against Arsenal. Lost in a cup final against someone who played for Manchester United. And it's Thomas who takes it. Oh, what a goal, Nicky Thomas! He's done it, the magic little man at the venerable age of 37.
Arsenal are champions. They'd won it twice in 3 years. The season they'd won it the season before, they'd only conceded 18 goals, 23 clean sheets. They'd only lost one game. They almost did an Invincibles.
Yeah.
you know, 15 years or so before they actually did it under George Graham. That was one hell of a team. And also in 1992, the FA Cup hadn't been devalued in the way that it has now, unfortunately. So there was none of that playing a weakened team stuff. That was George Graham's best side. Now, Wrexham had finished bottom of the entire Football League the season before. And the only reason they hadn't been relegated from the Football League was because they were restructuring the Football League. It was the first, it was the best team playing the 92nd best team. First to last at the race course. Now, I love the race course. And some great Welsh victories, you know, the national team happened at the race course. But the fact that Mickey Thomas, who was 37, and a bit of a rogue, I think, a character, maybe a better...
I think both.
A better word of describing Mickey Thomas. I mean, unfortunately, he was a really good player. Played for Man United, played in the 79 Cup final. Yeah. He was a very, very good player. And unfortunately for Mickey... The first thing I think of when I think of Mickey Thomas is him being stabbed in the buttocks with a screwdriver.
Yes, it is.
When he was caught with a woman in a Volkswagen Polo. It's quite a chic car. I can't remember. I think it might be a Volkswagen Golf.
The most British affair ever.
Yes, he gets stabbed in the buttocks 15 times.
Nothing else, a screwdriver and a Volkswagen Polo.
He also went... he went to prison for money laundering through the YTS boys... at Wrexham.
He was printing in his garage.
I think he was forging, wasn't he forging 20s and selling them to the youth team?
Yeah.
Yes, and I think, from what I remember, the forgeries were really bad.
If anyone sells you a £20 note for less than £20...
Yeah. Alarm bells have got to ring.
I would say, unless it was 1999, my brain would go, ooh.
But also, if you're the youth team coach, right... or whatever he was doing, you're selling to 16-year-old kids, right? By definition, they can't go anywhere else apart from the town you live in, right?
Wrexham,
right. So they go into the chip shop. There's probably, you could probably throw a chip at the chip shop from the training ground, right?
Yeah.
And they try to pay with a 20 that Mickey's just made in his garage.
With a picture of Mickey where the Queen should be.
On his photocopy.
Where did you get these from?
Did he photocopy this money, Mickey? No.
It's on pink paper. What a goal, though, mate. What a strike.
What a goal. I love Steve Watkin as well, and it's very much of its era. And even though Wrexham, you know, they were rivals to the Swans, because we were often in the same division as them in the 90s when I was growing up, I have a real affection for Wrexham, and I've met a lot of Wrexham fans on Wales away trips, and they are a good bunch.
I worked a little bit with Mickey Thomas down the years, and he tells this brilliant story about when he was in jail after the... Because he got sent down properly and went to jail. But the guards really quite liked him because he was Mickey Thomas off of Man United and Chelsea. So they immediately kind of gave him a little bit more leeway than everybody else.
And they gave him £20 each.
Get £22 notes.
Wait till it dries, lads.
And they used to let him out. So they used to put... When the whoever was the prison warden wasn't there... They used to put a ladder...
Shut up.
Not genuine story, right?
Super.
They used to put a ladder, how British do you want this to be, against the wall. He would climb out. They would push the ladder over the top. He'd go to the local pub.
Shut up. This is amazing.
100%, right? And then come back, climb back up the ladder, back in. See you later, lads.
And see, he has not reoffended since. This is what I'm talking about, rehabilitation. Prison should not just be punishment, should it?
One night he got back... The ladder wasn't there. He had to knock on the door of jail.
He had to rob a newsagent,
get
arrested. Get
back in.
Wow. Oh, shut up.
I remember the tail end of his career at Wrexham when he was, you know, he was 37 when he scored that goal against Arsenal, that free kick.
He looked older than that, my mate, didn't he?
Oh, my God, yeah.
How old's Ronaldo?
Yeah.
I don't see a Mickey Thomas. I don't see a Mickey Thomas calendar this Christmas, put it that way.
So I don't remember him at his best, but the game he played against England in 84 when he was at Chelsea. Mm. He was brilliant that day. He was brilliant.
And he used to take girls back to... because he didn't have a place in London, he used to live in the changing rooms at Stamford Bridge. So,
I'm liking this bloke more and more.
100%. So he didn't...
He must have a book out. He must have an autobiography.
There is an autobiography. It's very, very good.
I'll have to buy that. He lived in the changing rooms.
This is super.
Is he thick?
He would come... Well, basically, they used to pay him a train fare home. So sometimes he wouldn't come home and he'd trouser the train fare to buy a printing press eventually. Oh,
and buy some more A4.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's made a placard photocopier.
So Mick would, he would bring girls back to Stamford Bridge and put the floodlights on.
If you can't get a leg over after doing that, you've got no chance. As a virile 18, 19-year-old, if I could have taken a young lady back to Jenner Park in Barry and turn the floodlights on, I mean, the world would be my oyster, my absolute oyster.
Take her into the dress room, you know, hang your coat up anywhere you like.
Pick a peg.
Yeah. If you can have a shower, love, have it quick, because it will go cold very quickly.
You know, you've got to push it again. It's like at a leisure centre.
Right, my first choice for this week is from Super Rugby, which is coming back pretty soon. This is the Auckland Blues against the Canterbury Crusaders.
He's not going to pass it, as he does to Rokothoko. Joe Rokothoko, up the middle. He's got Hilton with him. Oh, he didn't pass it, but he's found Collins in support. Count off Spencer. Oh, this is amazing. Count off Spencer twists the knife in the in-goal area.
It's a hell of a move, isn't it?
To throw it across your own posts.
Oh,
the danger involved in that for the start is fantastic. The fact that they're going to win and get rid of Canterbury's bonus point, the losing bonus point, if they get the try and conversion, adds to it. The fact that Carlos Spencer is so keen on sticking it to the Canterbury crowd.
Are they big rivals, yeah, those two clubs? Right.
Yeah, and I don't think he was the most popular of players outside of Auckland anyway. I think he was very much he's a bit of a show pony of a fly half, and I think a lot of the New Zealand public didn't really take to him much, especially if you weren't from where he was from.
Was he one of those players who, if they're playing for your club, you love
yes.
them?
Yes, yeah.
But everyone else hates them.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I loved him about that, and he couldn't have taken any further away from the post than he did.
Do you know what it is?
Superb.
It's the equivalent, which I don't think I've ever seen in a proper game of football. I've only ever seen this like on the playground, of rounding the keeper.
Yeah.
And then stopping.
Yes.
And then getting on your hands and knees.
Put it in with your head.
Never, ever, ever seen that done in rugby or anything similar.
Well, it's just spiteful. And it denies the Crusaders a bonus point, which
so good.
Doesn't impact massively on their season eventually, but it could have. And then to give the crowd the bird as well. It's fantastic.
But what's better, if people hate you.
Yeah.
To do that must be a wonderful thing. I'll give you a reason to hate me right now.
Yeah.
I'll score the best try this season and I'll rub your nose in it as well.
And I like the fact his teammates, he met, I don't know whether he's talked about it before, but Dougie Howlett's just strutting next to him as well. Like, yeah, we're going to put it down in the corner. Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, well, there's like half a dozen of them in the corner around him, isn't there?
Yeah. And they're just like, yeah, go on in. Yeah. Nobody's going, put it down, put it down, put it down.
No.
That's what I'd have been doing.
Yeah.
I'm that guy. Please, Carlos,
Come on. You know you can get the kick. We all know you're good.
If that had been Dave Bishop on the other side, people are getting knocked out at that point. You're taking the piss there, pal.
It's one of my favourite tries. And I think it's up there with, just for pure skill, it's probably up there with the one France score at Twickenham, which I think is the best try ever.
They didn't launch it past a crossbar as well, though. That was the
first pass. And he does the first pass.
Yeah.
So to start the move where you should just kick it out, but to start the move anyway from there is fantastic. But throwing it across your own posts.
Hmm. I've never seen that before. I mean, Super Rugby at that time was so good. I mean, it's good now, right? But that was a real, real golden period of rugby there.
I think so. I think a lot of people sort of dismissed it as being basketball-style rugby, but...
It's like watching rugby league. Some of those tackles are brutal. I mean, after the ball's gone, people are getting levelled off the ball.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it was like touch rugby, you know, basketball rugby. It was proper hardcore rugby, but just some fabulous tries and lots of them.
I'd love to know what his coach said.
If you get away with it, you can do whatever you like, can't you?
Well, it's the Ferguson-Cantona thing, isn't it? He let... Cantona do whatever he wanted because he knew that Cantona was the best player.
Did you hear the story about that changing room when Cantona has done the kung fu kick in
against
the crowd?
Matthew Simmons, the Crystal Palace fan.
Yeah.
So, how do I know his name?
So they're all walking back into the changing rooms after that, and I think Gary Pallister turns to Lee Sharp and just went, fucking wait for this. This is going to be something else from Ferguson. And apparently he lays into everybody, just goes around the room just going, you can't, it's terrible, you're playing like this. And then just points to Eric and goes, you can't do that. This is a paid advert from BetterHelp Therapy Online. Now, we all carry around lots of different sort of stress moments, whether it's like big or small. It could be as huge as, how am I going to pay the mortgage this month? Or, you know, I'm ill, but I don't really want to talk to anybody about that because I don't want to make them feel stressed about it as well. Or, you know, it could be just something as small as, how am I going to get to school pickup in time? I've got a meeting. How do I change that? How do I move that? I forgot to cancel that. And lots of the time we keep it bottled up. And whether it's big or small, it can really start to affect us negatively. And therapy is kind of a safe space to get those things off your chest. So whether it's like coming up with plans to organise your life a little bit better, or whether it's just having someone to talk to about those things you don't want to stress out your mates or your family with.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. It's convenient, accessible, affordable and entirely online. You will be matched with a therapist after filling out a brief survey, and you can switch therapists at any time.
Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/distant. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/distant.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Documentary time. This week it is Mike's choice. Mike, what have you gone for this week?
This is a documentary about rugby league and a labour of love, really. The director is a bloke I've worked with a few times, on some rugby stuff for BBC, called Tarek Ali. And Tarek had this idea nearly 25 years ago for this documentary and got knocked back and kept putting it out there. And eventually, a couple of years ago, got made. They repeated it just on Sunday night on BBC Wales. And it's called Codebreakers. And it's about the story about the Welsh players who went and played rugby league, left rugby union to play rugby league. Now, as a Welsh lad growing up playing union, I knew a bit about it and I knew a few of the names, but I really had no idea.
That's a bloody shame.
Obviously, when I went, I said the right things and the press that I needed a new challenge. That's bullshit. I just needed security for my family.
I'll hear stories of racism that still shock today.
I'd have loved to have played for Cardiff, and I'd dreamt of playing for Wales. A black man, a black boy is never going to play for Wales. Never.
I'll find out how shady agents enticed our boys to head north to the heartland of rugby league.
We find them with friends when they can just get him married. That's a good time because they want a house. It's usually a working class type of fella that takes the bait or makes the right decision.
And I'll discover just what was at stake if you did decide to switch codes.
You'd be banished to hell. You'll be, you know, you'll never be forgiven.
This is the story of the Welsh Rugby League player, the Rugby Codebreakers.
I don't want to get on my high horse about it. I know Al, without putting words in his mouth, is of a similar opinion to me. But for me, a lot of the inequities in society are not about, particularly about race, although race is touched on in that quite a bit, but it's about class. And it's about the working class. And I know that, you know, my old man was a doctor. My mother was the first person in her family, you know, to ever go to university. But her dad was a coal miner.
Yeah.
But another part of that was just to grow up and play rugby and rugby union. And rugby league was even seen by the people that I grew up with playing as the enemy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Very much as them stealing players from Wales to go and play this.
The phrase you'd always hear in the early 90s when we were losing to Romania and, you know, didn't we lose to Namibia and you know, on a development tour, was we're playing our second 15.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, John Devereux and Alan Bateman and Scott Gibbs and Jonathan Davis, obviously.
And I didn't realise, but it was weird that growing up for me, it was never an option, but we never considered rugby league because all we ever heard was bad things about it and stealing our players and this, that and the other. So this documentary is a real, real eye-opener. I had no idea that it went so far back. But if you think about it, of course, it makes sense. You know, it makes sense that in Wales, where it is rugby's a working-class game,
yeah,
that blokes are going to, you know, try and look after their family and you know, and sort out their financial futures if they can do it. And it was never going to be an option in Wales. I mean, I played for the rugby club in Barry. My dad played and captained the rugby club in Barry. I went to Barry Comprehensive School. My dad went to Barry Grammar School. And Barry is... There's no one famous in Barry, right? I'm including myself in that. But there's no one... I mean, Russell Grant lived there for a bit in the 80s, right? So a chubby bloke who does horoscopes lived there. And that was a big deal, right? Put it this way. There's a fucking... There's a blue plaque in Barry, right? Yes. I shit you not.
Right.
There's a blue plaque in Barry because Bob Hope's mum and dad lived there for a bit, right? Not even Bob Hope. He wasn't even born there. Bob Hope's mum and dad.
You know, I hate to do this West versus East, East versus West one-upmanship, but when it comes to Carmarthen, do you know who's from Carmarthen?
Surprise me.
Merlin, the wizard.
Oh, shut up, you tit.
King Arthur's wizard.
That's one of the many places Merlin's from. Don't tell me that's where he got buried as well, with other 95 locations in the UK. He must have chopped him up into little bits, Merlin. He's everywhere, the twat. He's in most towns in Cornwall. Fuck off, Merlin. What I'm saying is, there's a dearth of talented people that have come out of Barry, right? If you Google
it.
Gus Risman is one of the all-time rugby league giants, right?
Yeah.
This is a man who took the you know, Great Britain on tour in 1946 to Australia. They didn't lose a game. That's never happened since. There are 11 Welsh players in that squad. 11, right? Gus Risman is, when they put the statue of the Rugby League in Wembley, he's one of the five people they've chosen to go on that statue. One of the other ones is another Welshman, Billy Boston. I'll talk about him in a second, right? So two of those five are Welsh. Gus Risman, they mentioned on Wikipedia that he was born in Cardiff, which he was. But he was raised and went to school in Barry, Captain Barry Grammar School, rugby team, right? I've never heard of him.
He's Stanley Matthews, isn't he? He's the Rugby League Stanley Matthews.
He's Stanley Matthews, but if Stanley Matthews never got mentioned in his hometown.
I loved this documentary and thought it was fantastic, but it was quite an odd watch because as someone who classes himself as a big sports fan and also a very patriotic sports fan, so football's my game.
Yeah.
But if you are world-class at something and you're Welsh, I will follow your career. So I don't know anything about Taekwondo, but I will follow Jay Jones when she's, you know, competing in the Olympics or whatever. I think the best example of that is world powerboating champion Jonathan Jones from the early 90s, who was from Abertavi. Now, he's got a page in the scrapbook. I don't even understand powerboating. I could not believe how little I knew about these people.
Yeah,
and nothing. I felt ashamed. I felt embarrassed.
Yeah.
Jim Sullivan, he's sort of the great Wigan player.
Yes.
There's a statue of him outside Wigan's ground.
He's worshipped up there.
Yeah.
Now, Wigan, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're the sort of Man United of rugby league, aren't they? They're probably England's most famous rugby league club.
Yeah.
Certainly when I was watching a bit of rugby league in the 90s, they seemed to win it all the time. Their greatest ever player...
Mm.
Their George Best, their Kenny Dalglish, is a Welshman I'd never heard of.
No. Yeah.
It blew my mind. And I'm of an age where I remember Jonathan Davis going.
Yes.
And I remember John Devereux going.
Yeah.
And, you know, Scott Gibbs. Di Young went as well,
yeah,
didn't he,
yeah.
from
Di
what
Young,
I remember.
Yeah.
Especially Jonathan Davis. You know, he was the 1980s Gareth Bale. I worship Jonathan Davis.
Yeah.
And I was heartbroken when he went. Now, as a father, if the thing I was world class at didn't pay,
yes,
and I had young kids, I would do the thing that allowed me to look after my children. Right.
My neighbour there, Vic next door, was good friends with Di Watkins, Yeah. So when Doyle Watkins went north, he would go north with him, and you know he'd have a run out and do a bit of training or whatever. And they both sort of they played club rugby in South Wales together. You told me the time when I might get the facts wrong, but this is the gist of it: is that Doyle Watkins had come back and they were having a drink in, I'm not sure if it was Cardiff Arms Park or Rodney Parade, but they were having there was a Newport game going on, and one of the committee men basically came over to Doyle Watkins and said, you're not welcome here.
Yeah, yeah.
Professional.
Crazy.
You need to leave. So he made him leave. How humiliating is that for a start, right? But then where you see the discrepancy between players who understood what other players had to go through, especially to look after their families and the dickheads running the game, was when he left, all the sort of old fellas that were with him, ex-players left. And I think one of the players on the home team said, what's going on? Oh, Doyle's been asked to leave rugby league. Oh, we'll leave as well then. So both teams that played that day left and went to the same pub.
Yeah.
You know, because they understood what it was like.
You were persona non grata.
Oh, yeah.
And
you couldn't speak to scouts. They couldn't be outside your house. I mean, this was the thing.
Yeah.
I really like the John Devereaux story where he asked the witness guy to come down incognito and be really, really sort of, you know,
discreet.
Be as discreet as you can. He turns up in a full witness blazer. Brings his mate, witness blazer, car with witness written all the way around the outside of it. It's like, oh, I'm going to have to go then, aren't I?
I'm trying to get ashamed on behalf of other people, but as a white bloke, who I like to think that's got no hang-ups about colour and creed and race, right?
Yeah.
To think that there were players there who went, not just for the money, but because they thought, if I stay here, I'm never going to get in a Welsh team, I'm never going to get the recognition.
100%. 100%.
That is crazy.
So Clive Sullivan is the first black sports person to captain a Great Britain side at anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In any sport. That was what blew my mind. In any sport.
Any sport. So it's 1970s.
I'd never heard of him.
Scores the greatest try in, you know, probably one of the most played ones on grandstand, and wins the World Cup against Australia.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
But you know,
his nephew is Nathan Blake.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
I did not know that.
And his son Anthony played for St Helens and for Great Britain as well.
Ryan Giggs' father played rugby league.
He did. Danny Wilson.
Yeah,
Danny
Wilson.
So Danny played for, again, similarly, he was one of few black players who'd played for Cardiff at rugby union.
Well, Wales didn't win a Five Nations between 1911 and 1950.
Well, the same reason we were toilet in the, you know, in most of the 80s was the
same
thing.
I remember all those players going north when I was, you know, 8, 9, 10. And my dad had told me about David Watkins. I thought David Watkins was the first one. I hadn't realised that there'd been this steady flow of Welsh talent from amateur rugby union to professional rugby league. And also one thing my dad's died in the World Rugby Union. And what I like now about rugby league, which I hadn't realised, is that it's quite an anti-establishment game. It's quite an anti-establishment ethos to rugby league.
Yeah, it's just a lack of recognition. I mean, I just think there's a B&Q on Newport Road, right?
Yeah, yes.
And I took a photograph a couple of years ago. But now bear in mind that none of those lads, Sullivan, Billy Boston, Gus Risman, you know, there's no recognition here for any of those lads. There's no blue plaques, there's no statues, there's no nothing. I went to B&Q on Newport Road a couple of years ago, right? There's a plaque there, I'll read it to you. This plaque commemorates the opening of W.H. Smith / Do It All Cardiff by the Right Honourable the Lord Mayor of Cardiff, Councillor Philip Dunleavy, OBE, 10th of June 1982. So Do It All's got a plaque, right? And Gus Risman hasn't got a plaque. When the one ex-player fills up, especially about the race thing.
But it goes back even to the turn of the century guys where the Irish guy has to get rid of the O from his name.
Oh, that was unbelievable, that. I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah. It is the establishment game in Wales.
Yeah.
In a way that bizarrely
tied into the church and you know, we haven't got a lot of public schools in Wales, but it was very much part of those, you know, it was...
Yeah, yeah.
When they show that picture in the sort of memento box at the beginning, it just says Neil. They spelt that wrong. And they insisted on dropping the O in the programmes and on the,
you know. Talk about mementos, the Rugby League archive.
Don't get me on that. Well, what the Welsh Rugby Union... Right, here we go. what the fuck, right? You think how long rugby goes back in Wales, and you say it's part of the national fabric of Wales, right? 1870s, you know, 150 years of history. There's nothing, right?
I went to the National Football Museum in Manchester.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It is absolutely astonishing.
Oh, I bet it is.
And I went to the one in Preston when it used to be at Deepdale. And then they moved it quite controversially a few years ago. But it's what a day. If you like football and if you like history, it's just the best possible.
Well, the NFL one in Kent there in Ohio, you look at that and think, my God.
And it's not hard to do this stuff.
Well, it's just old shirts on mannequins. Yeah, yeah. I'd walk around that for an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be amazing.
You know, old caps, old boots and programmes. And well, Carolyn hit the presenter.
Yes.
She holds up, whose shirt is it? It's still got the mud on it.
I think it's one of Jim Sullivan's.
Pre-war game, still got them caked in mud that's, you know, 70 years old. The thing that frustrates me about Welsh sport in general, in particular rugby, I think rugby's quite bad for this, is poor use of its resources.
Oh, right.
Gareth Edwards.
Why is his fucking statue outside Card World, right, in a shopping centre? You've got to be shitting me. One of the best players of all time.
Crazy decision.
You walk out like a discount card shop and there's Gareth Edwards' statue.
But like,
next to like a fucking vape store. What? You wouldn't see like a Don Bradman statue next to a flipping...
Yeah, you know, some Greggs.
Fucking indoor Greggs. With a couple of chavs just sat on it having a fag. Can you imagine? Because if you listen to this and you're not from Wales, not this... I mean, there's less and less of those every week, I'd imagine. But I mean,
even that Maltese bugger's gone now.
Yeah. I don't, you know, maybe you're in, you know, New Zealand or Australia.
I don't know New Zealand after last week.
Yeah, okay. All right.
That's a fair point.
Right after,
so you're in American Samoa. They like us after a couple of
huge
3 weeks
there.
Ago.
They're huge.
Imagine having a
Jaya really still listening.
Imagine having a really brilliant, glorious history, but just fucking it up, just not making the best of it.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, just wasting a really, really interesting history.
Go to the Cabinet War Rooms in London.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just empty. What's this? Oh, that's where Churchill was. Where? Just down there.
Just over there.
Is there anything down there? No.
I genuinely felt embarrassed that I'd not heard of these people because we're not talking about, you know, goodish, decent players.
The best of the best.
We're talking about icons of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I know the Welsh sporting icons, or I thought I did, and clearly I didn't, and I found it very, very embarrassing. But yeah, what a wonderful programme.
So that is called Codebreakers. It's available on the iPlayer, so if you go to the BBC iPlayer, you can watch that anytime you like.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Right, let's go to the second round of clips. Alice, you're up first this time.
This clip went viral, so If you've already seen it, you won't mind seeing it again, because it's absolutely brilliant. If you haven't seen it, thank me later. But this is Ian Wright meeting the first truly positive male role model he had in his life as a young kid at Highbury when he was making a documentary about his life and his time at Arsenal.
Hello, Ian. Long time no see.
Mr. Pigden. You're alive.
I'm alive, he says. How are you doing?
I can't believe it. Someone said you was dead.
As you see, I'm very passionate, and I'm so glad you've done so well with yourself.
I listened to Ian Wright's Desert Island Discs this morning.
God. Oh.
Which is one of the most moving 45 minutes of radio I've ever heard. I adore Ian Wright. And I've just realised this is quite an Arsenal-heavy selection of clips from me, but I love Ian Wright. And what I like about him is that he came to football very late. Now, until Thierry Henry broke his record, he was Arsenal's record goal scorer, beating Ted Drake's goal scoring record, I think. He didn't join Arsenal till he was 28. Now, he's working as a labourer on a building site in South London. And he kept having trials, and then eventually Crystal Palace kept hounding him and saying, please come down for trials. And his foreman said, listen, Ian, if it doesn't work out for you, you've got a job here. If it does work out for you, but only for a few months, I will keep your job. Please, please. Because he was learning a trick. He just had two kids. So Sean Wright Phillips and Bradley Wright Phillips, he had them when he was very young. So he was just desperate to earn a living for his children. Same principle as Jonathan Davis going to Widnes and rather than playing for Llanelli. So he wasn't going to turn up at this trial. Anyway, he does so. He starts playing for Palace. He gets picked up by Arsenal, and then he goes on to be one of the most iconic strikers of the 1990s in the Premier League. And what I love about Ian is that he remembers all the knockbacks, and more importantly, crucially, I think he remembers how they made him feel. So he's actually a very empathetic bloke. I think he's a really, really good pundit, but he's very empathetic when it comes to other players and other people. And also, because he didn't have any positive male role models apart from this teacher who he'd been told was dead incorrectly.
That's the amazing part of that, isn't it?
So his father left when he was about 18 months, and his stepfather was abusive to his mum. And there's a heartbreaking story in the Desert Island Discs where all of his estate are going on his trip and he hasn't got a good pair of trousers. So word gets out to his dad, who he hasn't seen for years. Ian hasn't got a pair of trousers, and they're going on this trip and he's embarrassed. So his father gets word to him. He says, listen, I'll give you some money so you can buy yourself a pair of trousers. I'll be there at 9:30. So he's waiting by the entrance of his estate at 9:30. Well, and he turns up, I think, 5:15.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah.
And he's just been sat there for hours. He said, if he hadn't turned up, I never would have spoken to him again. And Mr. Pigden, who was his teacher, saw that there was something in Ian Wright and was made him milk monitor and made sure he collected the register, made him feel important and wouldn't let him play football unless he'd been behaving in class because he was quite a disruptive pupil. And what I think is great is that not all successful people are like this by a long shot, but Ian Wright realises and remembers that you can't become successful at your chosen sport or profession without the help of lots of other people. And he's very good at remembering that stuff. Terry was a good example of this in the modern age, Harry Kane. So Harry Kane is sponsoring Leighton Orient next season.
Yes, he is, yeah. Yeah.
Because he was like, I went there on loan as a very young player.
So
and I
fell
his
in first
love
game,
with the
isn't it? His first
league
games.
They can't survive without my money. So I'm rich,
that's great.
They're poor. So I'll sponsor them because it's the least I can do because I learnt a huge amount playing at Leighton Orient. So it's, I'm putting something back into the game I love. And also he's from that neck of the woods as well.
Well, the right thing with me, I was a PE teacher for sort of, 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
And I still see kids who are now in their 30s that I taught. And when I taught in the West Country and I taught in Cardiff. And they still call you, I mean, I let kids in school call me Bubs anyway, so they're still, a lot of them, call me, hey, Bubs, right, Bubs, like, always very respectful.
Yeah.
And it's always nice when you hear people say that you got a positive effect in their life, it's lovely, right? And it's without being too cliched, it is why you teach, or certainly why you should teach. And just so I was watching that thinking, when I was in school, and I was a bit of a prick in school, I went through a phase of being a bit of what he would call a naughty boy, right?
Yeah.
I was a naughty boy. And then, but to read some old programs, I had a teacher called Mrs. Lethbridge, who was my craft and design teacher.
Right.
Just her school reports are quite heartbreaking. They're like, was never mad with me. But you can see, I look at her now thinking, my God, she must be breaking a half. She could see potential in me, but I was a bit of a dick, right? But then we had a fellow called Offie Scott, Mal Scott, who was the head of PE there, who played rugby with my dad. He was scrum half, dad was hooker. So, knew the family really well, knew me really well. And I was always getting sent off and getting kicked out of school and being a real knob.
It's quite hard to get sent off in rugby in the 80s.
I managed. I managed to, yeah. I found it
with
quite easy.
With a plomb.
Yeah. And I remember once that I got sent off and I lost my ride completely.
No way.
Really?
Yeah, I know. And the next day I went to go and see him because I told him, I must have told him to fuck off 20 times right when he set me off.
Yeah.
Fuck off, fuck off, fuck off, fuck off, fuck off. Set me off, foul mouth. So next day in school, I was mortified.
Thing is, it's a game for thugs played by gentlemen, isn't it?
Yeah, that's absolutely, what they always say. That's how it works.
So I remember the next day going to see him. And I went. I said, Mr. Scott, I said, I'm so sorry about yesterday. I lost my temper. I'm so sorry.
I lost my temper on the eighth. Fuck off.
And he went, Mike. We all. But he was called Offie Scott. My dad told me because he used to tell everyone to fuck off when he played rugby, right? So. So.
That's great.
So he says, it's understandable, mate. He said, but, you know, just you need to keep a cool head. He said, but just to teach you a lesson, I've taken you out of the county team. I was like, you can't do that. It's nothing to do with the school. He said, well, yeah, it is to do with the school. It's a school's team, you know.
Yeah.
So we're taking you out. Fuck off. Right, so I went off on him again the second time, right? So I got kicked out of school and various things. But the point being, no matter how much of a knob I ever was with those teachers, and that this thing with that Sydney Pigden, which I loved, right? I remember when I did get a Welsh schools nod when I was like 18.
Yeah.
Mal Scott would take me out on my own, like after school with the cones and with the balls and with the bags.
What I love about it is if you're lucky enough to have a really fantastic teacher or role model at that age, it just means the world. And, you know, Ian Wright, he won league titles, he won the FA Cup. And yeah. The chaotic lifestyle and upbringing he had as a kid, Mr. Pigdenan, you know, stepped into the scene. Ian Wright, well, he'd been in prison at the age of 18.
Yeah.
So who knows where he'd have ended up. And I just think what I love about it is that...
He's on a ladder with Mickey Thomas.
But he hasn't let the success... he hasn't let the success change him or forget his roots. And the other thing I should add, David Rocastle was a wonderful player.
Same estate,
wonderful,
yeah?
Wonderful player. We're from the same estate. And obviously he died when he was 33.
Mm.
And the way Ian talks about how inspiring David Rocastle was, because Arsenal picked up David Rocastle when he was a young kid, was Ian, because he had no one to take him to these trials. So he had trials at Charlton, he had trials at Palace, he had trials at Millwall.
But I always had a dad who came to all my games and bought my rugby boots and bought my shirts. And
there is a long-held myth that if you have a lot of knockbacks as a kid, it makes you hungry for success.
Yeah.
Whereas in reality, you are better if you are supported.
Sure.
You know, it's true that you do have people, and we've already talked about him in this podcast this evening. You know, Mike Tyson had, you know, nothing, went on to become world champion. It would have been better if he'd had a supportive set of parents.
I wonder who Kimbo Slice's PE teacher was. Never gets the recognition he deserves, that man.
Never gets it, does he? Had them all out by a rotary line, training.
First time I saw you twat that bloke over a patio set. It was the proudest moment of my life.
When you knocked that guy into that toddler's paddling pool, I thought I'm gonna stick with you.
Right, my clip for round two. I still don't know how this happened, and I still can't understand why more wasn't made of it at the time or since.
Typical Hughes volley. Whack. Does that go in? Well, if you look at it closely, I think it is going. I think it's the boards at the back and comes back out.
Mark Hughes scored an actual goal in the actual Premier League that went in, like all the way in the goal, and no one noticed.
Literally bounced off the back of the goal.
That's
also
bonkers.
there is a more famous older example of this happening. There's
go on.
The Clive Allen free kick.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
Who's he playing? Is he playing for Crystal Palace in 1980, where it actually bounces out of the goal because it hits the stanchion, doesn't it? And it comes straight back out. So he leathers it. He puts his...
But didn't this one hit the advertising hoarding and come out?
Well, the hoardings are so close. Is it the Dell, yeah?
Yes.
And the hoardings were so close to the back of the goal, and Mark Hughes hits it with so much venom that it kind of hits the hoardings, comes straight back out again.
Yeah, but even he didn't make a big fuss about it. And none of his team inside the 6-yard box did anything.
But why would you not? Why would you not go nuts? Like, right now, you've got people, well, not right now, but this season, you've got people complaining about, like, Firmino's armpit being offside or onside. for a goal being denied.
I mean, millimetres.
Yeah. This has gone right the way into the goal.
But everyone must have heard that as well. You hear it bounce off an advertising hoard.
Imagine being one of the defenders or the goalkeeper who's then just blagged it and gone, did anyone else see that? Fuck it. I don't think anyone's noticed.
Like Maradona trotting back to the halfway line.
Like the Maradona hands of God, yeah.
What's up with your hand? Diego, nothing? It's fine. What are you shaking it for? It's fine.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, the fact that I won the ball in the air and I'm 5'4" against Peter Shilton, who's a goalkeeper.
Jumping a full stretch, punching.
Yeah. I think the referee just thought that I'm quite springy.
I think I got away with it, guys.
Yeah.
Wouldn't the linesman be on the corner flag as well at that time?
Yeah. He's there and Sparky looks at him and I've been looked at by Mark Hughes for just asking a question and I crap my pants.
Oh, God, I love Mark Hughes.
I crumbled within 7 seconds of looking at his eyes. He's a petrifying man.
What a physique for rugby union.
My granddad, he would rave about Mark Hughes' thighs, right? My grandfather was a footballer, in the before and during and after the war, and a boxer. But his opinion of Mark Hughes' thighs could not be any higher. And that stuck in my mind.
Have you seen the footage of him when he was coaching Man City?
Oh, I love this. Mm. Yeah.
And he just absolutely wallops a volley at the top corner.
The other one, which I can't find, is he is unveiling a new signing, and I can't remember who he's managing, so it would be easy to work out, but he's unveiling a new signing, and the new signing fucks up the kick-ups, the keepy-uppies that you've got to do for the press, and then Mark Hughes just does it in his suit.
Right, Mike, what is your choice for round number two?
Oh, God, this is the most joyous thing I've seen in a long, long time, right? Obviously, everyone's going through a bit of a shit time at the moment. Do yourself a favour. Watch 3 minutes of this.
Highland dancing is second nature to Duncan MacLean. After all, he learnt the finer points from his mother in Scotland a matter of 85 years ago. Now 88 himself, he regularly has a Highland fling in the front room to remind himself of his days on the music hall and to entertain his wife, Elsie. But this sort of thing, remarkable enough in a man who'll soon be embarking on his 90th year, is merely a warm-up for Mr. MacLean's first love and main pursuit, sprinting.
So there we go, the tartan flash, right? I used to live by the tenor, what would Burt Reynolds do, right?
Right.
That has changed since when I saw that on Thursday, to what would the tartan flash do in any given situation, right? It's so good. That opening, when you see it, and his wife is sat there, love her, bless her, on the two-seater sofa, and he's doing a Highland fling, which, I mean, I talked to my mate Luke about this, who's Scottish, and we're in universal agreement that a Highland fling is probably the shittest of all the world dances. Right? He remembers me having to do the Highland fling in school, and even Scottish people hate it, so I don't know who's supposed to enjoy it, right?
Well, Elsie isn't.
Do you know what? I'll tell you why Elsie's not fucking enjoying it, shall I?
Cool.
She's seen it every day for 50 years. You know, just I can imagine Elsie, God rest her soul, just saying, Flash, can we just have a morning off?
Yeah.
Just...
The Welsh equivalent is Dance Your Clock Show, which is clog dancing. I don't know if you've ever seen this. And
my mate Gethin should do that.
My dad would always say as a teenager, he'd say, oh, if you want girls to like you, clog show.
Really? No matter how big your clogs are.
Oh, I mean, there's a caveat there. If you want girls who like clog dancing to like you,
yeah, that was clog dancing. He's missed out a bit of that sentence, I would say.
Dad, I want no bits. Yeah. I want no part of the clog dancing fancying girls. Thank you very much.
Get in the club, watching clog show. Girls like the boys who clog.
So he's doing a Highland fling for his missus, right?
And she your dad lied to you.
With like, she sat there like painted on eyes, isn't she?
She is bored shitless. Oh. She has heard him talk about winning the South African 100 metres championship.
In 1910.
9.9?
Amazing, though. Amazing.
Well, it's the 100 yards.
Pull your
head. So it's shorter than 100 metres.
Bollocks.
Tartan Flash's name bandied around this podcast willy-nilly.
9.9 seconds.
100 yards, though, wasn't it? 100 yards.
Yeah, shorter distance. I like two things about this.
You're talking about a 10-800. That's doable. I loved him. I love him so much.
He does the 100 metres in 14 and a half seconds as an 88-year-old.
But I'm pretty sure, right? I mean, there's that clip when he's over at Crystal Palace there, and Elsie's there wearing her Sunday best again, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's there. Like my nan, she looked like my nan in a day, right? My nan would have about 14 layers of clothes on.
Yeah.
So she'll have, I'm telling you, Elsie's wearing stockings with suspenders.
Yeah. Petticoat.
Some knickered arrangement, then a petticoat, then an underskirt, then a girdle, then a skirt, and then a vest, and then several blouses, and a top, and a jacket, and a coat, and a hat, and a hat pin, right? And a brooch.
Right?
a brooch,
right? With a stopwatch that I'm fairly convinced has been stuck on 14 seconds for about 30 years, right?
Yeah.
But there's no way, right? There's no way the Flash is doing that in 14 seconds.
It's just, it? I just did think, I've got no idea what my 100-meter time is, but I thought if I can't beat an 88-year-old man.
Good boxer too, mate. Good boxer.
Yeah.
Broke a bloke's ribs.
My dad.
What time did I do, love? What time was it? 14 seconds again, Flash. Yeah. Oh, great, that. Been 14 seconds since the 50s.
I'm so consistent. That's the thing. I'm not drunk. I'm 88, 90 years of age.
4 seconds since my personal best.
He's doing sprints at the age of... He's almost...
He's going to America. He's then getting on a plane to America where, like, I think the next oldest bloke is, like, 48. He's like, my...
Yeah. You'd have to fancy your chances when you went in an over-40s race. If you're 44 and the bloke in the lane next to you is 50 years old.
I fancy my chance against Alan Wells in the over-40s. I'm a very confident man. Do you know, I Googled him, I think he died at 96. I was gutted. I'd like to think he died on the track. That'd be brilliant if he did. Did 14 seconds again and then died. Elsie had died 5 years earlier and he just propped her up. She'd been embalmed with a 14-second stopwatch next to the finish line. What say, is that, love? What's that you say, Elsie? 14 seconds? Aye, right enough. That's...
What, another Highland Fling? Okay, off you are so nicely. I love the way you say please at the end of that.
Grandad Flash, where's Nana Elsie gone? Aye, in the track. She's been dead for years. Just there, just wheel her out. Stick her on the finish line. Little voice box that just says 14 seconds. Press play. How's it deal, love? 14 seconds.
14 seconds.
Oh, the wind blow high and the wind blow low. Dancing around a corpse in the living room. Just out of habit. Just out of habit. We've all done it, haven't we? Hey, what's Bantu for murderer? Hey, what's Bantu for being kept against my will? Poor woman. She didn't talk in all that. Do you notice?
The whole thing.
What a life. Oh, wake up in the morning, just think, oh, Jesus Christ. Put 14 layers on, go downstairs, have a Highland Fling, go to the track in the rain. Say 14 again. Seconds. Come on.
Even though it's clearly taken him a minute and a half.
Come on. He hit a bus in Africa again.
9.9, I did love. 9.9.
Iron his kilt. Curse my longevity and go to
Did you break his rubs? Whoa, that's great. That's
right enough.
1910. 9.9.
See you in the morning.
Yeah.
And I don't even reckon Bantu. That was Bantu for little fast man.
Good night, Flash.
Night.
Imagine with your Bantu Google Translate. It says here it means you weak cunt. I don't know. No, I love the Flash. Shut up. Don't knock the Flash. Oh, the Bantu lads just a chant, you know. Fast one.
Night now.
Flash Bantu for 14 seconds.
Oh, I love you, Elsie. Aye. Thanks.
I love you too. Want a cup of tea, Elsie? 14 seconds. Right enough. Elsie, how much longer should I do this flame? 14 seconds. I want nothing more in life than in 50 years from now to still be putting on my best Highland gear and doing a fling for my wife downstairs and then going down to Leckwith running track.
Smashing out a 1 minute 30 hundred meters. Kelly's there, just going.
14 seconds.
For Christ's sake, just tell him 14 seconds, please.
It's not worth it, Ben.
He gets angry otherwise. God. He gets angry and bangs on about South Africa.
if we don't want him to bang on about F.W. de Klerk, it's easier to say that he's run 100 metres in 14 seconds and then we can all go home.
I told him it was 14 now. He was P.W. Botha for 4 days.
Please don't mention that time Ellis did Zola Budd as a clip because he'll lose his rag again.
British.
Oh, no, Mike.
So it's time for books. Ellis, you can go first with books. What you got?
I thought I'd go highbrow.
Oh, good.
I absolutely love Alan Sillitoe's writing.
Okay.
Saturday Night, Sunday Morning is fantastic. In particular, I love The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner. It's a collection of short stories. The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner is the first one. And I like running. I know that Mike and I disagree on this. I think after a couple of minutes, there is this feeling of freedom that you get that I think is brilliant.
Yeah,
I've just got a feeling of angina.
And I think that Sillitoe captures that really well in this story. It's about a young boy who's a talented runner, but he's in a borstal, and it's set in the 50s, and it was turned into a fantastic film starring Tom Courtenay, which came out in the early 60s, I think. But he's this defiant young rebel, and he's been institutionalised, but they do let him out so that he can practice his running because he's running in a big important race. I'm not going to give anything away because, you know, spoilers, but it is a cracking read. And I think Sillitoe's one of the really brilliant English writers of the 50s and 60s. And there is a sporting connection, so that's my book for this week.
I've gone running as well, but a slightly different kind of running book. It's by Anna McNuff. It's called The Pants of Perspective. Anna is one of these adventurers who kind of goes around the world doing different challenges. She was a rower who didn't quite make it into the Olympic setup. Her dad had won a bronze medal at the Olympics in the past, and I think she's kind of inspired by that and a little bit kind of fueled by that as well. She rode a bike across America. This book is about her running the full length of New Zealand, which hopefully will bring us back a few New Zealand listeners. I doubt it, but it might. She's recently run barefoot across the whole of the UK. And it's just it's kind of about that. It's kind of about the people she meets along the way and the moments she has in her head of what am I doing and why am I doing it?
I've gone highbrow as well. I've gone for Max Boyce. no, do you know what? It's not the usual sort of book that I'd pick on here. I bought this at the charity shop a couple of years ago. I'm a big fan of Max Boyce anyway, as a performer, the few times I've met him, he's been a very nice bloke. But this is called Max Boyce and the Mad Pursuit of Applause. He became very famous very quickly in the sort of early 70s. And Elle will identify with this. He was offered a series of programs on the television. But he said, well, I haven't got 3 hours of stuff. I've only got my 40 minutes that I do. I can't suddenly come up with another 2.5 hours of material. It's just not going to happen. So they came up with a premise, almost like a proto Rod Gilbert's work experience of where he goes but all sport-based. So this book is about, there's a great bit about hanging out with rodeo riders and being in the rodeo.
Cool.
He plays elephant polo in India, which is brilliant. But my favourite bit, unsurprisingly, is he went over with the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes.
And this was just around the time that American football started on Channel 4. And I was lucky enough, a few years ago, at Max's 70th birthday at Treorchy Rugby Club, where he did the famous album, BBC Wales did a thing there, and I got to interview Max Boyce there. But not to ask him the normal questions he gets asked, I'm sure. I asked him about that because I'm a big NFL fan.
Yeah.
About the Dallas Cowboys thing. And he was saying, because I remember watching it as a kid. He was in, if you don't know it, they put him in a room with a fella called Ed Jones, Ed Too Tall Jones, 6'9", like defensive end, and Max Boyce. And he goes to preseason with the Cowboys, and it's about him trying to make the team. Now, if you ever met Max Boyce is about 5'6".
Yeah.
Curly haired, very friendly looking Welshman who played a guitar and carries a big leak around the place, right? So they said, even at the time, and Max had been a coal miner and played a little bit of rugby, he wasn't a pushover, but even then, the Cowboys, you know, were a professional NFL outfit. They're not going to be involved in some sort of joke thing, right? So they were very keen for it not to be a joke.
Right.
So Max Boyce is telling the story that they had to tell the Cowboys that Max Boyce was one of Wales's best rugby players.
No way.
Yeah, they didn't tell him that he was a comedian.
Oh, no way. They said, brilliant.
He's a really good rugby player.
They think he's JPR.
So they give him this shot. They said, okay, we'll come over. You know, and at a time, sort of 70s and 80s,
oh my God.
A lot of players from here were going over there to be kickers and try things. So.
Yeah.
So Max Boyce says he gets on the plane. He gets on the plane to Dallas. And so when he gets to Dallas, there's this entourage from the Cowboys, right? And they come up and says, are you Max Boyce? He goes, well, yes, sir. I'm Max Boyce. Yeah, he goes, we thought he'd be a little taller than this. And he went, well, I haven't been well. Which, I just love that.
Oh, that's good.
He says he quite early on gets into it. You know, he's doing his best and he's going through you know, he's really slogging his guts out. And they put him on the field. They said first game they played was against the Green Bay Packers.
Right. An actual
preseason game. So they say to Max, Packers at the time were awful, early 80s.
Yeah.
And the Cowboys were good. They said to Max, when we get up by 2 scores, we'll bring you on. Not as a kicker, as a running back, right?
Oh, my God.
So he sat there on the sideline. And he still remembers the play. I can't remember if it was called some like East slot, right on whatever it was, right?
Yeah.
But he remembers to this day, and he's a 70-year-old man.
He does, yeah.
He remembers that exact play.
Yeah.
And he said he sat there on the sideline waiting to go on and have this play for the Cowboys in Texas Stadium, you know? It was real upset, and the Packers won the game. So that he never got on the field. And he said that's one of his few regrets in life. And he just sat there for the whole game in the helmet, in the pads, on the sideline, waiting to go on and have that one run, play that one play for the Cowboys.
He'd have got mullet, wouldn't he? He'd have had his spine snapped.
Would you care? You wouldn't care, mate. You'd love it. What, one chance?
Yeah, I'd play one play. 100%.
Of course you would.
100%. Yeah. Right, if you want to find any of the clips that we've been talking about during the podcast, we'll tweet some out during the week, but the best place to find them all, we'll stick a playlist up under episode 8 on our YouTube channel. So the Socially Distant Sports Bar is what you need to search for on YouTube. At Distant Pod is where you can find us on Insta, on Twitter, and on Facebook as well. And if you want the free beers, you need to go to beer52.com/distant for your 8 free beers. Right, that's us for this week. We'll be back with you again for another one next time.